Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Boy, you should have heard the show we just did off the air. Man, we were on fire.
Yeah, we were. You know, I guess you could title this week's show, All Is Not Quiet and Happy in Hooterville, right?
Oh, man.
I don't know.
There's all sorts of drama everywhere. We thought we had seen the end of mass cuts in WWE. Not so. There's alleged issues with folks just not joining hands and singing songs together in the AEW locker room, apparently. We'll discuss all these things over the course of this hour because there's so much juicy drama, it seems like, to get to in AEW. Let's get as much of this WWE stuff out of the way as we can. And it is quite a big story, obviously, because, you know, WWE started NXT UK with a great deal of fanfare, with competition on the horizon with the hometown channel ITV, the one that is around the country and had an incredible presence and at the time posed a legitimate threat to WWE's idea of expanding the brand and having a presence in the UK. The ITV show fell apart, and it seemed like all the steam behind the UK show went with it over the last couple of years. And we saw a number of NXT UK stars appear in NXT proper in the last week or so in preparation for this big show. And then we get the news yesterday, Les, that a number of talents, in fact, the overwhelming majority of NXT UK talents were let go in the past couple of days. At the same time, they make an announcement about not only dissolving NXT UK, but looking at a relaunch for something called NXT Europe, which will encompass, obviously, more than the UK sometime next year. Now, there are some things, and Dave noted this as well in The Observer, which is up on the front page at f4wonline.com. It's obviously very sad when anybody gets let go, and we wish them all very well. But it seems odd to me that if you're preparing a relaunch and a whole new thing, that you just cut a whole ton of people loose. I mean, by my count, I believe Dave had in The Observer this week maybe six people who were still left under contract outside of the ones you saw on NXT this week. So I'm thinking to myself, if you're relaunching a brand and you're trying to take over Europe, you probably shouldn't be cutting everybody.
Yeah, that would be my first thought as well. But if we kind of dissect that and dwell into it just a little more, a couple things. What is WWE's procedure when they drop talent and then they end up bringing some of them back? Isn't that pretty much been the history of that business in modern time?
Well, that's true. No one's ever really gone forever in this company.
No. So that's I'm thinking that maybe that's part of it too, because if the September show for NXT UK is going to be the last one, and they're not relaunching until the new year, you got about a 3 month, 4 month. Well, we don't know when they're relaunching in the new year, so it could be any place from 3 to 6 months. So the company, after paying $10 million for an investigation and finding out that they're $20 million in the hole because the boss threw some money around, maybe this is a way to save some. You know, plus, the UK, the NXT UK people are going to find work, obviously, because they're probably the most exposed on TV in England, or in Europe for that matter, and so they're going to get more a wider exposure. So then, if we bring those guys back or girls into 2023, they'll probably bring some of those fans with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I suppose if you look at it from a strictly corporate business perspective, you're right. If they don't have an immediate target date on January 1st, then, you know, perhaps just from a business corporation standpoint, especially with the recent news about their finances and what was and wasn't going on the books, that it made more sense to, quote unquote, save some money for the next quarter or two before bringing everybody back.
Yeah, and you brought up a point, too, to me. Make note of Shawn Michaels' new title.
Yes. Yeah, that was the first time I had noticed him having a title of any kind. He was referred to in the articles talking about this as the Vice President of Talent Development Creative, which I think is the really fancy way of saying NXT Booker.
And it's a longtime sidekick of the head of talent relations and creative.
That is true.
And you know what? The title is just icing on the cake, because I'm sure Paul or Triple H or whoever you want to call him, Sean has had his ear all this time anyway. You know, their history together, you know, tells me that. So, yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know. And maybe some of these guys from NXT America will end up over in NXT Europe. At least, maybe I'm not full time, possibly, but you know, maybe for a short run. Like we had the Russian kid last that, you know, I can't remember his name. Robbie couldn't pronounce it when he was here.
You're talking about Dragunov.
Yeah, and you know, but he was in, left a hell of an impression, I thought, and right back out, and you know, so it can go the other way as well. You know, put some of the American guys over there when they start the NXT Europe. And that way it will, you know, at least make the roster look like it's been expanded with people from other parts of the world.
So those
I don't know. This is all speculation for me, too.
Right. Tentative plans, certainly, that at least that we're aware of with respect to what's going to be happening across the pond with the NXT brand. I know there were a couple of other items you wanted to make mention of in terms of, you know, another week analyzing Raw just as a television show and maybe some changes that you've seen, as well as I know you wanted to also shout out Raquel Rodriguez as part of the women's tag title tournament on SmackDown the other day.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, well, in terms of the WWE shows, the, you know, Monday and Friday shows, I think they consistently get better. They flow better. I think that the matches are more solid. I mean, to talk about Raw, you'd have to talk about Lashley and AJ, which went 20-some minutes, you know, and it was a hell of a match. McIntyre's promo was red hot, and he's been hot like that, too. And part of that could be that he's, you know, Triple H is, you know, giving him a little more confidence and, you know, freeing him up to do a few more things as well. But yeah, I do want to, the other thing I want to mention, Ciampa and Miz. When I first saw Ciampa with Miz, I thought, oh no, please. But then the more I see it, two things kind of, I see coming from this. First of all, Ciampa is playing this part, tongue in cheek. Cause what, you know, he says, we're awesome. And then, you know, it's like, sure we are. So I can see him putting a little steam on Miz, and it wouldn't take away from him, because I think a lot of the fans that watch Raw, you know, knows Ciampa from ROH and from NXT, and realize what a talented guy he is and what he had produced in those places, right? So I'm hoping that's the deal anyway, and the fact that he is playing this is tongue-in-cheek. These guys could end up in a feud before the year is out. So that's a possibility as well. But yeah, I want to mention this about Raquel Rodriguez from two Fridays ago in the tag match, first round of the tag team tournament. And I meant to bring this up last week, but if any of you listening have the opportunity, you can find that tag match from 2 weeks ago. Go back and I don't know where in the damn show, but because I was sitting there and what I'm about to talk about just struck me and like a brick. Rodriguez came in on a hot tag, and for it couldn't have been more than 30 to 45 seconds, she set that building on fire. And the reason she did that was several things. Her facial expressions, her body language, but she was on fire, and I could feel the building catch hold. I mean, and it wasn't just, yeah, she's a baby face, and so we got to cheer the baby face come back. She took them to another level. for just that brief period of time. I'm not saying a Steve Austin or a Rock level, but a bigger level than any of the boys on that show that same night, I think. And my point is, it jumped off the page at me because I hadn't seen that in a while with any male or female, because of everything so much being laid out in the back. We're going paint by numbers. We have to get through. Oh, I've got to be in here to do this spot. So, and this was, as far as I know, strictly improv. But, and I see that with her anyway. She lights, you know, but this was the strongest I'd seen her on a comeback, period. You know, and I'm sure she may have done this before. But if you get a chance to watch that, please do. And understand that I'm a beat up old bump taker myself. But that is what should be on every hot comeback, male, female, singles match, tag match, I don't care. Because that's what we tried to do back in the day, and that's what gets the people to take that ride and climb that mountain with you. And she sure did it in spades, and my hat's off to her for that. I think, you know, this tournament, this may be the less easy to figure out of anybody's tournament. Tony Khan will probably hate to hear me say that because he's the king of tournaments. And but yeah, because we talked about this when it first started, Rodriguez and her partner, and then Bailey's team, and then it was another team that I was thinking as well might
Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't rule out Asuka and
Alexa.
Yeah. I would say I don't know who booked it, who put these tournaments. But, yeah, there's less chance of saying, well, we know so-and-so is going to win this. It goes without saying. Well, it doesn't. Do you think?
I don't. And that the fact that there isn't a neon sign, although, you know, again, as we talk about, I talked about before the start of the tournament, I felt like it was a vehicle for Bayley's contingent. But when you look at that lineup, you can legitimately make an argument for at least two other teams, which adds some intrigue to it. It's not just a coronation.
Right. You're right. It's not. And, you know, I mentioned a couple weeks ago with Dakota Kai, I thought she does seem that she has improved a bit in her work.
Oh, well, talk to me about what you see there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just she seems a little more confident. And a little, you know, and of course, being moved up to this roster and being with Bailey, maybe that, you know, it's funny. You know, people don't think it. You think of this actor or this actress they have a real sensitive, they're sensitive people. They're artists in that. You know, so are a lot of people in the wrestling business. And sometimes, you know, it just takes something small to set that person on fire and to make them, you know, I know I can look back and never mind in ring. I mean, that was never a challenge for me to step out and want to do my best. But, you know, when Ron Fuller turned the television over for me to build a show for him here in Knoxville, when the Crockett's decided they wanted a magazine, Les designed and put us together the best thing. When I'm giving my head to a certain degree with just an outline, to me, I think I work more diligently and harder because I realize, okay, they're giving me my head. I better come back with something worth having. And you know, I think that happens with kids in the ring as well. So maybe that's all the case. But anyway, yes, I think WWE and even this past Tuesday, and we won't get into details about that, I thought that was a stronger show. And you know, you're starting to see some of these kids, Giovanni and Carmella. They had a very solid match. I watched him and thought, okay, he was never the guy I picked for this title, but I see improvement. And so, yeah, I think they'll end up improving that whole brand as well. It'd come down the line. So, yes. I think competition should be leery and watching WWE because basically somebody is throwing down the gauntlet to Triple H and he's decided he's going to pick it up and go with it.
Well, perhaps that's what they were thinking over in AEW when they made CM Punk versus Jon Moxley for next week on Dynamite. I have so many questions, Les, but the suspicious New Yorker in me feels like there's something here tying these things together between Punk and Moxley seemingly being in a big hurry to get to this next week when you've got a pay-per-view in 2 weeks. And all the alleged issues now between Punk and the locker room, more specifically Punk and Adam Page, whether or not Punk was returning a receipt from a promo Page did a few months back that Punk allegedly didn't like. I'll lay out my theory. I don't know why Tony, in this theory, would want to rush through this Moxley match. I'd probably prefer to wait for Labor Day weekend. But perhaps he had his mind set on Punk Page as a rematch for this, and Punk getting injured maybe threw a monkey wrench in the plans. He had to go with the interim thing, and he's decided he's not moving that date or that match. So they make this match on television for next week with Punk and Moxley because, as we've been talking about, they're throwing a lot of stuff out there on TV every week and still in a range. So here we are with this. We're going to settle the title situation on TV. That should do something for us, and we'll be hot heading into the pay-per-view weekend. Meanwhile, you get this stuff brewing on screen and in the newsletters and such and on the websites about potential bad blood between Punk and Page. And since you're on short notice doing this 10 days before the pay-per-view, it would be real easy for Punk to prevail on Wednesday, if this is the direction they want to go, and Page to either call him out or lay him out. And you've got a pay-per-view match in less than 10 days that has some heat behind it without a whole lot of time put into it.
And where do you leave Moxley in this?
That is a great question.
You take him down a couple notches, and I don't see the reason to do that or why it would be necessary. And that would be, yeah, with a pay-per-view 10 days down the road, that would have been Moxley and Punk. Now, they could even come back if you want the following Wednesday or something. You know, it shouldn't be one and done with them. Punk's been gone a while. Moxley has defended the title a couple times. So yes, if you have to go to an hour draw, go there. If you have to get a double DQ, a double count out, whatever, bring these guys back. And then during this, then you've got Page who held the title. And wait a minute, guys, I belong in here too. And then you can start a build there, him, you know, talking about, I don't know who's going to come out on this second match or blah, 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 blah. But hey, I think I want to go. And this Tony Schiavone deal where he's the priest that listens to everybody's confessions,
yes,
you know, can say, yes, heal, son. God's with you. No, I'm being facetious about that. But then, you know, you can even build that part of that into the storyline. You know, Paige and Tony Khan, look, man, you know, what do I have to do? Well, look, you know, that this has already been in their contract. If the first match didn't decide it, then there would be obviously a return. You're going to have to wait your turn. He can show his impatience. He can do whatever. Get him some solid wins. And I don't mean carrying some kid that barely slap his ass with both hands for 20 minutes. I mean going out there and rip somebody's butt in 2 or 3 minutes to prove that I need to be, whoever it is, Punk or Moxley, I want a piece of that. So, yes. But I think the reason for this is we place second in all cable on Wednesday night. Oh, my God, I may cut my wrist. Tony Khan, welcome to the real world, son. Because you're not going to, it doesn't happen every week. You had a hell of a run to this point, as I said, I think a couple of weeks ago, Vic. People are, you know, a lot of this was brand new, and now it's not any longer. So some people are going to say, well, I don't need to see that much blood or need to see that many tables. And some are going to say, I love that and I'll keep watching. I mean, it's, you know, different opinions, different values. So, yes, you're going to slip some. So the last thing I would suggest after 62 years of being involved in this sort of thing is not to panic, not to throw everything against the wall to see what's going to stick and give six, you know, all these title matches and stipulate. You're already doing that. Stop and look at what you've done. You virtually have blood every week. Somebody goes through a table every week. You have a run-in and virtually afterbirth in almost every match, and you've slipped. Maybe you don't need to do all that again because it becomes repetitious, you know? And so that, I'm thinking that's part of it. But I think he's pushing this for next Wednesday night because that Wednesday night rating to him is more important than longevity and working these two guys through and getting Punk and Paige, you know, on the other end of it. So, and again, that's just my opinion, and I've been around this a day or two, so yeah, I would think there's some credence to my opinion.
I have a couple of more questions about the show from Dynamite this past Wednesday, as well as wanting to get your take on this Punk Page stuff and whether or not Adam Page does or doesn't take direction well. But since you talked about having 62 years of experience in this business in just about every capacity possible, I feel like now's a good time to let everybody know where they can see some of that history in terms of HWA shows and the Brian Pillman shows.
All right, sure. Yeah, you can get Wrestling from the Heartland. That's the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content each. And they're both two DVD sets, matches, interviews, extras. Myself and Joe Dombrowski, who's now the voice of MLW and three or four other companies. Joe's picking up in the world. We do the voiceover. Joe does more of the play-by-play, and I give stories from behind the scenes and, you know, and talk about some of the performers and that sort of thing. And you can get that at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And as you mentioned, the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th Anniversary. That's a four DVD set, over 15 hours of content. And all four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, footage from the auctions, awards, extras, running out your ears. And again, Joe Dombrowski and myself do the voiceover, me giving the history and the background, and Joe doing more of the play-by-play. And may I say with the Pillman thing, it's the only place in those years that you could see ECW, WCW, and WWE or WWF, whatever you want to call them, all under the same roof at the same time. And I'm very, very proud of these shows, the wrestlers and the volunteers and everything. But check it out, if you will. You can get that at PillmanShow.com or the two addresses I gave you earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com and ProWrestlingLibrary.com. But also, along those same lines, I'll throw this in real quick. On the www.BrianPillmanShow.com, if you click on About, you'll see my name pop up, and they're starting to build a little background history magazine, covers of magazines that I've designed for the Crockett's, wrestling pictures, all sorts of things. So you can check that out there as well.
So I promise we're a couple of minutes away from getting into these issues between CM Punk and Adam Page, but I did want to ask you about a couple of other things regarding Dynamite this week. Well, first, actually, sure. Opinion, if I may, with the whole Jungle Boy Christian thing. I didn't think anything they did was wrong necessarily or bad. I would leave that to the guy who's been doing this for 62 years to tell me what you think. My problem with what they did this week, though, on the show with the two of them was that we just got finished seeing a couple of incidents between Punk and Moxley where they couldn't be kept apart, and it worked so well, and you had already done it two times with those two guys, and then you have Jungle Boy and Christian in another pull apart. It's just, we could have done that next week.
Yes, we could have, and it's too much too soon. Yeah. But then if you start, you know, and when you, if people hear me saying this, if you get tired of hearing me say it, you just, I don't know what tell you, because Tony Khan books too much of everything. I say that's a catch-all phrase, obviously, but you don't need run-ins and afterbursts and brawls after every match. You don't need, a tournament every week. You don't need tables and blood. You don't need everything every week. In fact, if we all stop to think about it, the longer we wait for something, the more valuable it becomes to us when we finally get it. Doesn't that ring true for you, Vic?
Makes sense to me.
Me too. And that's again, that's the thing with this Punk and Moxley. I'd have given it the next, you know, the next 10 days to build and to get that in the pay-per-view and then come back with it again on the following Wednesday if you want to, but don't rush. But again, if you just beat Moxley, you're not doing him any favors, and you're not, you know, and it should be tougher for Punk to beat him that way. And as part of that story is you've got two guys who are a little different styles, different people. And I don't know if you, anybody paid any attention to this, but when Mox came out, he mentioned Punk throwing another pipe bomb. So he referenced Punk's sit down at WWE. So, yeah, I just think that there's no need to rush all this. And let's face it, I don't care how hard I work or anybody works in this business, you can't please every fan on the face of the earth. So the fact that your ratings slip a little bit or the fact, yes, you have to pay attention to that. But, God, you can't panic every time something like that happens because, Tony, you'll be an institution before this is all over if you do.
Hey, some thoughts about Daniel Garcia and Bryan Danielson in their 2 out of 3 falls match, with Garcia obviously getting quite a spotlight shown on him in the last few weeks, gaining that victory over Danielson a couple of weeks back. What'd you think about this follow-up and potential issues between Jericho and Garcia?
I think the match was very good. I wasn't as immured with it as my dear friend Bryan Alvarez. I listened to him and Simp this morning. But it was a hell of a match. I think both guys oversold things a bit much, but I think that is also something that I see happening a lot in AEW. I think Bryan Danielson made Garcia, and I think he'll end up as part of Blackstone. And I think him and Punk in the art. I think Bryan's promo last Friday on Garcia was, he said, screw the sports entertainment stuff, right? Quit talking that nonsense. And called attention to that, you know. And, I think they made Garcia. And I just wish he had some calves. And I realize, boys and girls, having been a competitive bodybuilder, a lot of times those body parts come from your mom and dad, genetics. But I, you know what, in watching him, and again, you know me, I'm about crossing T's and dotting I's, and I'm about details. I'm not a lover of kick pads. In fact, I'd rather see wrestling boots every day of the week. But at least stick kick pads on him and thick ones, because I keep wanting to put an ankle lock on him myself. As old and feeble as I may be, I got him. Those ankles wouldn't hold up. But seriously, all kidding aside, it was a hell of a match. And the kid went, I sat and watched, I thought, this kid's going to school right here and now. But yeah, I think it was a hell of a match. It was probably the highlight of the show. I can't imagine anything else that would have jumped off the page that would have competed with it. Can you?
No. Specifically from a pure wrestling standpoint, you make a good point that Danielson may have gotten through to Garcia in a way we hadn't expected in that microphone battle, if you will, on Rampage the other day, asking him to quit with the sports entertainment stuff. And that could have been the seed that plants what you've pitched here moving forward. I did want to ask, because I'm looking at the clock and realizing I can't believe we've gone this long without mentioning the return of Kenny Omega. Obviously, with the shirt still on.
We could have gone without that.
With the shirt still on and him favoring a few things, they were certainly trying to get across the idea that he's still less than 100%. I wanted to know whether or not, in your opinion, did he really look like he was less than 100%? Is this something of an angle to build in, you know, him sort of getting his timing back and people picking him apart? What did you think of how he looked?
It could be an angle. I didn't see, he wasn't doing all his craziness. You know, and it could be an angle. You want my opinion on that match? It was a lucha match. Thank you. We can move on now. Everybody stood where they were supposed to be. Everybody got their turn in to get their shit in. I understand people are entertained, and I'm entertained by lucha, you know, occasionally, but a lucha tournament, I don't know. A trios tournament, if that's your, if that's your bag, then go for it. But you know, there's something else too that we've talked about incessantly about AEW and Tony Khan, is he does so much all the time that everybody can't keep track of everything, probably least of all him and his people. And so maybe this is one of the reasons that his numbers have slid a little bit too.
And perhaps some of the reasons for, and I don't even actually think we discussed this on the show a couple of weeks ago, but about the folks in the office who received promotions in the last couple of weeks. We referenced Tony Schiavone here a few minutes ago. I believe that official title for Tony is Senior Producer and Special Advisor in Talent Relations. So here's my question. Actually, let me read a quote from Tony first. He said, basically, this is about trying to make this a better place to work, which is interesting considering there were some stories going around in the last few weeks that Mr. Khan himself had been difficult to deal with. And some folks who are no longer with the company have talked about how when they weren't being used, they felt like they were ghosted by Tony Khan. And so Tony said, basically, what I do is walk around during the day, check in with folks, see how they're doing, happy, unhappy, what can we do to make it better? I like that. I mean, that's a great thing to have on the job, and you should. My question to you, Les, as someone who's been doing this for a long time now, is don't we have a director of talent relations? I mean, unless I miss something, I believe Christopher Daniels is the head of talent relations. Would this not fall under his duties?
Yes, it would. And let me say this. I have respect for Tony Schiavone. I don't know Tony well, but I've always gotten along with him, what little we were around one another. But yes, and as the head of talent relations, or Christopher, being a wrestler himself, negative things that are brought to him by one of the people in talent, he can say, yeah, I went through that, or, you know, and coming from him, I think it's going to carry a lot more weight than coming from Tony. Do I make sense with that?
You do, because he's someone who's done it. And Tony's been around the best, sure, and the brightest, but he never did it.
Yeah. Well, let me say it like this. Alex Marvez is a friend of mine. He certainly helped Rick Steamboat and Harley and I do our training manual a number of years ago. He's been a guest in my home. I like Alex. Alex is a hell of an expert at football. He's a hell of a writer. Would I put him in the position that Tony Schiavone's in? No. The reason? Because he hasn't been a wrestler. That's, you know, and I think that's, now, well, Schiavone has been around it, yes, and everything. And again, I'm sure Tony will be, he'll listen. He'll do his best to work things out with people. It's not that I don't think he can do the job. I just think that it's adding one person to your talent relations staff that you don't necessarily need.
So I'm going to ask you now, since we lean heavily on your insight and advice here on a weekly basis, to let everybody know where they can get a hold of you to get some of your pearls of wisdom for themselves in terms of weekend training camps. And I'm asking you to do that here for a reason. It's going to tie into what we're going to talk about next, Les.
All right. Yeah, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. And I'll be more than happy to send you out the information, what I charge, what I cover. I can do a one-day seminar. I prefer weekend training camp simply because you can just get more done. The kids end up learning more. I get more comfortable with them. I can see more that what they need, and they can get more comfortable with me. But anyway, yes, please feel free to drop me an email, lesthatcher28@gmail.com, and I will get back to you and let you know what I can offer and the price and everything, and hope we can do business.
So I ask you to do that there, Les, because we're moving on to CM Punk and Adam Page. And before we delve into the situation between Punk and Page and whether or not it's a work or there's legitimate bad blood there and folks are taking advantage of having a microphone in their hand and what have you, I was struck by some comments Adam Page has made recently, because you and I have talked previously at length about Adam Page and what you've seen in him and working with him. And this doesn't sound like the Adam Page you worked with or described to me, because he was doing an interview the other day and was asked about advice. You know, there's so many talented people in AEW who you could spend a few minutes talking to, like Punk, for example, or Sting, or Arn Anderson, or Dean Malenko. And with that, Page replied, "It's a good question, and probably the honest answer is that I'm stubborn, so I don't take advice. I listen to people say things, but rarely do I listen hard. I'm part of the movement that created the entire company, and I'm a world champion. I don't know that I need their advice. I'll certainly listen, but there is something to be said about trial and error and doing it on your own. I take more pride in that. Now, maybe some of that had to do with the whole cowboy character, but when I saw that, I thought to myself, that's not the guy I'm sure Les remembers.
It certainly is not. That I can say for sure. That I can say for sure. And I think making that statement public was not beneficial to him, was not beneficial to the industry, because sadly, some young kid that's had about six matches and been in the business about 15 minutes is saying, well, Page said you don't have to listen to anybody's trial and error. Well, to Adam Page and any other young hopeful that might be listening, or old hopeful for that matter, it's you got to listen, but it's going to be trial and error. I don't know that I've ever gone out in the ring and done anything the first time and made it as good as it could be. And it's going to, everything is trial and error. Business, any kind of business is trial and error. You know, help my son sell the storage buildings and the carports and stuff. Believe me, at this advanced age, it's trial and error. But I'm listening to anybody I can. There's a friend of mine that I've become my buddy that has a lot, just like my son and I. And he's the one that trained me in this. And I call him every day about something. Because, yes, trial and error is, we all go through. I don't care what the hell the business is. But, yes, you got to listen. And the Adam Page that I met initially opened his ears and had listened a lot. I've told this a few times here, but the first time I saw Adam Page was on a Ring of Honor show. He did a job for somebody, I don't remember who, because I was interested in Adam Page. I was booking the Race for the Ring tournament, the year-long tournament in Los Angeles. That was 2012 and 13. And I called Kevin Kelly to get Adam Page's phone number. Kevin says, you see money in him? I said, yeah, I do. So I called Adam and told him, you know, introduced myself and told him what I was interested in. And his home is in Virginia. And I told him I was going to be at my in-laws in Maggie Valley, North Carolina on a particular weekend. And I'd love to meet him. And there was a guy that had a wrestling, had a gym with had a building, I shouldn't say a gym, with a wrestling ring in it that I know we could use. And Adam said, I'll be there, you know. Now, he came in the night before, so be sure he was rested. I didn't know he was going to do that. But he checked into a motel. We worked out during the day. They ran a little show in there, and he actually worked on that show for them that night. Had he decided not to do that, I wouldn't have been upset. But we had a great day. And, you know, I'd say, well, you know, let me see you work with this, do a little something to this guy or that guy. And it went well. He was very easy to coach during the tournament. He did one match with Adam Pearce that they had a hell of a match. And Adam enjoyed working with him. And he got Adam over. But the match was, I liked the match and the way we finished it so much that we brought him back in a return of that same, the Adams against one another. Later in the year, it wasn't in the tournament, just for the show. And Adam Pearce actually put him over. Charlotte Fan Fest, I forget what year it was, he and who was his partner worked against, I think it was Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. But to be very honest, that match was so about spot, that they lost a crowd. But I remember Paige coming to me, said, what'd you think? He said, I think I know already. And I said, yeah, you do. And I mentioned what I just said here, you know, you guys, so many spots that the fans just, they got lost with it. But so I don't know the Adam Paige that won't listen. I don't know the Adam Paige that, you know, talks like this. And I don't know if it's part of the character or whether he's changed his way of thinking. I don't know. I like him, and you know that. I mean, since he started there, for those who are just getting to know Vic and I, when AEW first started, and we knew that the Bucks and Omega and God and 12 of their disciples that are all going to be part of this, I said, how many times, and Dick will back me on this, Adam Page is the guy they should be pushing because he's the least overused and the freshest. Did I not say that how many times?
Day one, from day one, over and over again.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a big fan. But I don't understand that and that comment. And like I say, it's the horrible thing about the comment is some young wrestler, you know, hopeful that's 18, 19 years old and it's just got to start. Well, Adam Page don't have to listen. I don't either. By God, I'll learn by trial and error. Okay, go for it then. No, I don't know why he made that comment. I feel bad, and it was the wrong thing for him to say.
So that's a little bit of your history with Adam Page, and you've got history with CM Punk as well. So I feel like you've got insight into how much of this might actually be legit, or is this setting something up, if not at Labor Day weekend, then maybe some other time down the line? You know, it's never been a secret that CM Punk has been known to rub some people the wrong way. But just how much of this that we've been hearing this week do you buy into?
Well, I think there's some serious heat there. I don't know how much, or I don't really know why. But, yeah, and Philip, or Punk, you know, first time I met him, he and Ace Steele and Cole Cabana, the Second City Saints, you know, all three of the boys from Chicago, they worked for me in HWA a few times. But I've been around. Well, when Punk and Joe went an hour in Dayton on Ring of Honor, I presented the new championship belt that night to Joe. And actually, Gabe had asked me to talk to them about, you know, their match. And I remember we went out back in the parking lot and talked about it for a while. But anyway, so I've got a history with Punk. And I've never had a problem with him. But yes, he will tend to rub you the wrong way until you get to know him and realize it's just, I will tend to do that too, because I have a sarcastic sense of humor. And if you don't understand it's my humor, you may not take it that way. But you don't take it on yourself to decide this. I think we talked about, I mentioned that earlier. These are things that back in the day, had this had happened, then the booker would be talking to both these guys in the back, because personal grudges and stuff was best not settled in front of the crowd, in front of the audience. And that was pretty much an unwritten law. You know, nobody talked about it, but that was just the way they wanted it. I saw one hellacious fight in Raleigh TV in a dressing room. It's probably not much bigger than a bathroom. And to shut it down, everybody's afraid to go in. It was Wahoo and Don Jardine, who was the Destroyer at the time, and there was blood everywhere, and they beat the hell out of each other. To this day, I don't know exactly why it happened, but it didn't happen in the ring. Business is business, boys, and your personal issues, you keep them to yourself and take them. And, of course, I realize today with so much social media that things like this do get out even if you don't want them to. So I just hope they get this straightened out. These guys could have a good match. Should have a good match when they finally get in the ring together. But they've got to get by this. Otherwise, they're going to stink the joint out. Now, that's the best. I mean, I say that. I hope it doesn't happen. But I've seen that happen before with guys who, you stiff me. I'm not going to give you anything. Well, and, you know, it escalates. Actually, it escalates down, not up, into something that's boring for the fans. Well, my point is this, Vic, if you and I are in their shoes and you hooked me and took me down and I realized there's no way I can't get out. I've got to get to the ropes because I can't switch out of this. He's got me hooked. Or we can lay there. And God knows in the year 2022, guys, and they tend to lay around a little more today than we did years ago, too. And then somebody will take that as the wrong way, but it's true. But anyway, I hope these guys get it straightened out, and I think it's necessary here, whether it's Tony Schiavone, Christopher Daniels, Tony Khan, or the President of the United States, or I don't know who, they need to sit down with these two guys and say, look, if we're going to do business, we're going to do business. You can't go into business for yourself, and you don't go out there and do that again. And I think, I'll finish by saying, I think this, Tony Khan needs to make the point that I can run this company and run it well with the two of you, or I can run it without you if I need to.
Completely agree. So that actually sort of leads into my question. Obviously, earlier in the show, I expressed some skepticism as to how legit this may be behind the scenes. And part of the reason I did that was because CM Punk apparently took some liberties with the mic in his hand this week, referencing Adam Page and calling him out when he knew Page could not come out because the segment was never going to be about them. And Punk is not, you know, from the territories or anything, but he is definitely from a different generation than the overwhelming majority of people in that locker room, including Adam Page. And I thought to myself, I know Punk is a character and a bit of a smartass, but he knows better than to do that. So either he's really angry, or this has to be setting something up, because as much of a character as he is, that does not seem like his character to me.
No, it shouldn't be. You know, I would suggest if I were to talk to my friend Adam Page today, I would say, you know, I don't think you should have made that public statement that you did about trial and error and not taking advice. In fact, I'm going to suggest that you go sit down with Jim Ross, Dean Malenko, Arn Anderson, and talk to them about it and see if you can't get another view of this whole thing. And you know what? I wouldn't be bashful if I were the boss at CM Punk the same thing. Go sit down with those three guys and listen, because I think we can do business. What little we allow to be seen publicly, we don't need to see any more of that. We can build off of that. And that could be the spark that makes this a hell of a feud, you know, somewhere down the line. But let me back up and say, I don't beat Moxley next Wednesday night, not in the middle, because he is, you know, it's not a case whether Jimmy Cornette thinks he can work, or whether I think he can work, or whether God thinks he can work. The point is, he's been in there, he's busted his ass, he's done the job, and you just don't take him out there and beat him, because he has been one of your featured guys. Anyway, let's keep our fingers and toes and everything crossed and hope the hell they do it the right way.
I have a theory, but it really depends on how you answer this question, whether or not we'll get into it here. Knowing Punk's temperament and willingness to speak freely as you do, do you think that he would have had any real trouble? I'm not talking about annoying folks, but real issues in territory locker rooms?
Probably. Yes. but you know what? Back then, most of us, when I say us young guys, because believe it or not, I was once, knew that you know, at some point, I don't remember who it was, asked me my opinion one time, and I said, you mean I'm allowed to have one? And this was probably a couple years into the business, because I wasn't going to rock the boat. Man, I'm here. I'm allowed to wrestle. This is what I want to do. And that guy, I'm wrestling tonight. I've seen him on TV. I bought a ticket. Wow. I'm going to tell him exactly what I want to do and how I want to do it. And probably I'm getting my ass handed to me. But no, it was a different time. And I suggest any young guys that might be listening to us, or young guys who are talking about this, should think it's cool because Punk went off script, or it's cool because Page didn't go out, or because he does cowboy shit. Catchphrases and hand signals, all that are cool, I guess. But the point is, don't rock the boat until you know that you're allowed to steer the boat, or row the boat, or be the captain of the boat. A lot of times you will get chances, you will get pushed, you will get opportunities because you have been quiet, because you've done what was asked of you, because you have not created a row with anybody. So keep that in mind if you're a young hopeful, and take care of yourself and take care of the business.
So my thought here regarding Punk and Page and these issues, maybe with not just Page but other people in the locker room being taken aback at allegedly criticisms Punk has made about the company and certain things, and being very vocal about it. And the story this week about how some folks actually thought he might quit. He was so angry and so opinionated about things that were happening. I'm wondering how much of this is simply generational, and maybe some of the younger folks, I don't want to say misreading Punk's energy necessarily, but I look at the difference in age legitimately and the way people approach things, particularly in this company, because there are a lot of guys who are not of Punk's generation who genuinely view this as much, if not more, performance art than simulated combat. And right. There's two different mindsets that go into that. So I could see younger folks looking at Punk thinking he's absolutely insane, while the Blackpool Combat Club is watching Punk do what he does and says, "Yeah, it's just another day at the office. Why are you guys getting so wound up about it?" You know, how you think that maybe some of that is going on as well?
Well, I think, in current years, in recent times, it goes on in every locker room, regardless of the size or the scope of the promotion, because of the generational differences, you know. And the shame of it is some guys may come up working with guys who spent 2 days in the business, right? Or just they're getting their feet wet too as promoters. So, hey, I work for Joe and Bill and Charlie. Hey, let me do anything I want. I go out there and, give the finger to the fans. Okay, it's because Jim and Charlie and Joe don't understand the business any better than you do. Now I'm going to work for this guy who's been in the business. Damn, I can't do this. I can't, they're professional. Isn't that a shame? Yes, it is terrible to be professional. But that, you know what? I think it boils down to that, Vic. You know, you work in an industry where personalities make money, right? Radio disc jockeys, you and I have talked about it before, you know. But there's also guidelines. And I think you would tell these guys that disc jockey who was a star in this market, and it's a big market, all of a sudden thought he could do no wrong, or that he was so good that he couldn't be fired. And guess what? He's looking for a job today because he stepped over the line. It happens, does it not?
Happens all the time.
Yeah. So I don't know if Adam Page is reading his own press clippings. And if he is, it's all right, man, because you created him. But just stop and think. These are people that you got to work with every day. Now, at this point in my life, I tend to be a lot more candid, openly candid, I should say. I'm candid all the time. Openly candid than I have been in years, because I'm thinking, okay, you know, I don't need to play politics. And I got some young guys that don't want to be around me. Because I won't blow smoke, you know, or because they worked with somebody who said, well, I said, Jesus, the guy can't teach you anything. Well, Les Thatcher, what an asshole. Okay, whatever. I don't want to do anything in this business that is halfway. I don't. That's my mindset. It will continue to be my mindset until the day I die. And some guys don't understand that, you know, and so they think, hey, it's wrestling, it's creative, so I can do anything. There will always be limitations, and you just got to deal with it. There are times that frustrated me as well, but it is what it is, and let's all work our butts off to make this a better business and to make it where everybody's drawing money and everybody's making money.
Just dawned on me, we talked about your DVDs that are available. Neglected to mention the t-shirts at Pro Wrestling Tees.
Damn it, we did, didn't we? I'm proud to say that Jack and Jerry Briscoe and I put out the first ever Pro Wrestling t-shirt that was on the market in 1972. It's called the Briscoe Booster Tees. And the artwork was by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get a copy of that particular t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees. Check it out. And you can also, if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, there's a I'm a Les Thatcher guy t-shirt on there as well. So if you're interested, go to Pro Wrestling Tees and look us up.
Brother, I think that's pretty much going to put a cap on this week's show, unless there's something else that we haven't gotten to that you want to mention.
I don't think so. Well, you know what? I'm hoping when we get fired up and moving, I'm hoping to get Brian James, Road Dogg, on the show with us. He had mentioned on Twitter or his podcast, don't you, you know, about Bob Cottle and I working Smokey and how he thought we were two of the greatest of all time and all. And I sent a message there and I said, hey, appreciate the kind words. Why don't you do our podcast and I'll do yours and we can talk about a lot of history. I've known Brian James since he was just a baby. So a shout out to Brian if he happens to listen to us. You know who we need to, since we're now all over the world? listen to our friend Lance Storm. He won't come on with us anymore because he can't get up this early. Those old guys are that way, I guess. Lance, you know I'm teasing if you're listening. All right, I've made enough enemies for today.
I was going to say, you know what? Lance is up plenty early. He's already probably put in 12 miles. That's why he's got to.
Well, that's, yes, that damn guy. He walks those damn mountains around Calgary. He upsets me. I'd wish my hips would allow me to walk that far.
Hey, listen, I went for a couple of walks this week, 4+ miles or whatever, and my left knee has been bothering me this entire week, and that's supposed to be my good one.
I got you. Well, that's like my right one is, I've got bursitis and arthritis.
Oh, Lord.
And when I sit too long, it's like I'm dragging that leg until I get moving and get circulation going in it.
Well, it sounds like the Epsom salt is calling us. We're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa. Of course, we've just been hearing the wisdom of the legend, Les Thatcher. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we will talk to you again next week.